Chapter 15. Another week of labor was put in by the partners, during which they worked up all the piles of dirt and rocks which had been ready to be washed. It proved worthwhile to get out of these piles all they contained. It was good pay. But, nevertheless, they stuck by their decision to give up. So they began breaking down the mine. While doing so, Dobbs cut his hand and yelled angrily,
"For what hellish reason of yours do we have to work like hunks in a steel mill to level this field? Just tell me, old man."
"We decided upon that day we started to work here,"
Howard answered.
"Didn't we?"
"Yes, we did. But I say it's a waste of time, that's what I think."
"The Lord might have said it's only a waste of time to build this earth, if it was He who actually did it. I figure we should be thankful to the mountain, which has rewarded our labor so generously. So we shouldn't leave this place as careless picnic parties and dirty motorists so often do. We have wounded this mountain, and I think it is our duty to close its wounds. The silent beauty of this place deserves our respect. Besides, I want to think of this place the way we found it, and not as it has been while we were taking away its treasures, which this same mountain has guarded for millions of years. I couldn't sleep well thinking I left the mountain looking like a junkyard. I'm sorry we can't do this restoration perfectly, that we can do no better than show our good intention and our gratitude. Now, if you guys won't help me, I'll do it alone, but I shall do it just the same."
Curtin laughed.
"The way you talk about a mountain as a personality is funny. Anyway, count me in. I'm with you. You should sweep a cabin when leaving it after it's sheltered you for the night. All right with me. Let's tackle the job. I have still another reason,"
Howard explained.
"A reason which is less sentimental, and I suppose this is a reason which will appeal to you, Dobbs, in particular. It's this. Suppose after we left, somebody comes up, looks around, and touches the right button. What then? We'll have a dozen goddamn bandits after us inside of a few hours to catch up with us and ease us of our lives and our income. Well, Dobbs, better level this part off and make it look like a flower garden. Don't always think of your pay. There may be good pay in it anyhow, even if we don't see it right now."
"All right. I'll do what I can, but leave me alone. I'm no gardener." He was reconciled, Dobbs was, only he didn't want to show it for fear Curtin might poke fun at him. Lunch was as usual, a kettle of tea, a leathery pancake, and a piece of dried meat which needed constant chewing. Lunch over, a pipe or two, and they were at work again. Daylight had to be used from the first ray to the last. Days in the tropics, even in midsummer, are not long, only slightly longer than the nights. Breakfast had to be over when the first rays of the sun shot above the horizon, and the mine was never left before dark had fallen. Only so had it been possible for the partners to do much work, interrupted as they often were by tropical cloudbursts, when for hours the whole plateau would become a lake.
"It sure has been the hardest job I ever had,"
Curtin said, when they were sitting by the fire smoking and reflecting on their life during the last months.
"Doubtless it was hard work,"
Howard admitted.
"But I'm positive that none of us in all his life ever made as good wages as we've made here."
"Maybe." This from Dobbs. "Yes, maybe. Only I think it might be better."
"Better what?"
Curtin asked, afraid that Dobbs might again bring up the question of staying for a few months more. "Oh, nothing. Forget it." Dobbs tried to shake off certain thoughts which apparently were troubling his mind.
"Yes, we've got our pay."
Howard spoke as though he had not listened to what the other two had said to each other.
"We've got the money. That's perfectly all right. But I figure as long as it isn't in the bank, or at least in a civilized town, we can hardly call it our own. We have a hellish long way before us, and a tough job still before we have everything safely at the nearest depot. That worries me a lot."
Neither Dobbs nor Curtin said anything. They knocked their pipes out, and all went back to work. The derricks, stages, and wheels were finally broken and set fire to, so as to leave no trace of their machinery. Then they covered the charred timber with earth. After this was done, they dug shrubs from the woods and planted them here. Howard had a good reason for doing everything so carefully.
Suppose one of you guys gambles his earnings away or loses them some other way. He may return, and he can still make his living here. So let's hide the place as well as we can to keep it safe for any one of us who might be in need.
Within 2 days, the partners had changed the mine so much that a few weeks later, it would have been very difficult to discover that it had formerly been a working place. Lacod, out during these days looking over the surroundings, came back to the camp only at night. He did not ask where the partners were working, nor where the mine was. He was not interested in knowing the location. It was his idea that wherever their mine was, it must be the wrong place, and not worth exploring. Because the partners had not found the lode after so many months of hard work, he would not touch the mine, even should he come upon it. If those fellows had not found the real Mother Vein near their mine, he would not try there, for to him it was proof that this was not the place he was after. He would not lose his time and labor investigating even the surroundings of their mine. "Did you find your lode today?" Dobbs asked when he came to the camp.
"Well, not yet," Lacod answered. "Somehow, I have the feeling that I have never been so close to it as I was this afternoon."
"You have my blessing. Don't you get tired out before you find the right spot."
"Don't you worry. I won't."
Lacod's confidence could not be shaken so easily.
"You're invited to dinner, Lakey,"
Howard said in a friendly tone.
"Leave your cooking alone. You'll need your grub."
"Well, thanks, partner." That night, the three partners felt like factory workers on Saturday evening. Tomorrow they would plant more shrubs and saplings on the mining field and destroy the narrow path leading to the mine so that the shrubs might have time to root and grow and make the plateau appear as untouched a wilderness as it was when it was discovered. The work would take the whole day, but it would be a joyful day, like a Sunday spent working in your own garden. Then they would rest comfortably. And the day after, they would prepare the packs and get the whole pack train ready so that they might leave 2 days later. It was a jolly evening they spent, and for the first time, they felt growing among them a bond which came very close to real friendship. So far, they had never been friends or comrades, only business partners without any common interest other than their work. During these long months, they had had no papers or books to enrich their thinking or their vocabulary. Always overtired, they had shortened their speech to such a point that Lacod sometimes failed to understand what the three partners were talking about. Pickaxes, spades, water, dirt, rocks, burrows, food, gold, clothing, the parts of their primitive machinery, and all details of their work were referred to by signals, often merely single letters, which only they themselves understood. They could talk to each other for half an hour without an outsider knowing what they said. They sometimes did not realize that their speech had changed to such primitiveness, for only by living in larger groups can man compare his speech with that used by others. Only when Lacod did not grasp their talk in full and had to ask over and over again did they realize that they had acquired a lingo of their own, which was incomprehensible to outsiders. The mine was leveled to the satisfaction of Howard. Anybody now coming upon the mine by chance would never think that a mine had been worked here. Or, if at all, not during the last 100 years.
"Doesn't it give you guys a real joy to look at this place now?"
Howard asked, with pride in his voice.
"All right," Dobbs said. "You have it your way, and you feel happy, so please, for the love of Mike's booze, leave us in peace with your feelings. Sometimes I think you must have been a preacher. Only the hell of it is I can't figure what church it was you wanted to catch birds for."
That night, Howard said,
"Something very important is really worrying me. I've been thinking things over, and I've come to the conclusion that it won't be so damn easy to get our goods safely to town." "Just what do you mean?"
Curtin asked.
"The trip has its damn hazards."
"Well, we know that. Tell us a better one." Dobbs was impatient at hearing what he thought was an old story.
"Don't you get nervous, Dobby. This trip will be different from the one that brought us here. Likely, it'll be the most difficult one you ever made in all your life. There may be bandits. There may be accidents. All sorts of accidents can happen on these dreadful trails across the Sierra. The police may pass our way and be a little too curious about what we're carrying in our packs. We've worked hard here, if any devil's ever worked hard, but I tell you guys, as long as we haven't got the whole cinnamon safely stowed away inside the strong boxes of a good bank, It isn't ours. I just wanted to mention this to make you understand we're not rich yet.
Lacod came to the fire. For a long while, he sat staring into the fire without saying a word. Then, as if coming out of a long dream, he said, "And I'm sure it must be around here, somewhere."
"Sure,"
Howard said, smiling.
"But leave your worries for another day. Help yourself to a good dinner. It's all waiting for you."
Then, to Dobbs,
"Hey, cook, what about the coffee?"
"Yes, ma'am. Coming." Dobbs pushed the coffee over to the old man.